And so in that experience, where I kind of came to was that you basically there are no energy neutral people. And not everybody, so there's, you either give energy or you drain energy, as a human.
That is the voice of John and Kendall Antonelli, and they'll be joining us on today's Super You podcast.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they
are. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super You. Welcome to today's Super You podcast. I couldn't be more excited. I've got in front of me and sitting with me here, we've got Kendall and John Antonelli, the owners and founders of Antonelli's Cheese Shop. So we're going to unpack a lot of things for all you entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs out there just to get some tips and tricks. They're coming up on their 10th anniversary, which you always hear me talk about, that only 2% of companies make it to 10 years. That's make it. That doesn't mean they're excelling. And these folks are excelling. You're going to love them. I love them. So we're going to get right into it.
We are so excited to be
thanks
here.
For thanks for having us, Eric. Way to build us up.
Yeah.
No, thanks for coming in. So I always like to start things off with, what's the oldest memory that you can recall from your childhood?
Okay, so my oldest memory is, I got two. One is of parents divorcing, so we're not going to go down that route right now. It's fine for me, but we don't need to kick off this with that moment. But another was after that divorce, both of my parents took off traveling in different areas of the world, and I was fortunate enough that they hauled me along with them. And my dad was opening up a dental clinic in Namche in Nepal in the Himalayas. And so we went hiking in the Himalayas, and I had one audio disc on tape, and it was Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody. I was 5 years old, and I listened to that thing on repeat over and over all the way up, hiking up in the Himalayas. And the one snapshot I remember is I just sat down and started crying, and I couldn't hike anymore. I couldn't move anymore. And this couple walked up to me, and they said, oh, I'm going to tell you a joke. And I said, what? And little did I know, they were trying to set me up, and they were telling me a joke so that I would run up to my dad and tell my joke. And I'm sure these people are thinking, this man has left his daughter. He's hiking way ahead. So they told me my first joke, and I remember it to this day. And it did exactly what it was supposed to do. It gave me enough energy and fuel to stand back up. I was so excited I knew my first joke, and I ran up the rest of this part of this mountain to tell it to my dad.
I love it. Now, what is the joke?
All right. That was, a lot of buildup for that joke. This guy's walking this gorilla down the street, and a policeman sees him and says, hey, he can't be out here. Take that ape to the zoo. So the guy takes him to the zoo. Next day, the same guy and same guy ape are walking down the street, and the policeman comes up and says, hey, I thought I told you to take that ape to the zoo. And he said, I did yesterday. Today I'm taking him to the movies. It's like the That's only awesome. Joke I've ever been able to properly awesome. Tell in my entire life.
I still love it. Yeah, I had two earliest memories. They're both food related, if you can imagine. One is just sitting on my kitchen floor as a kid, my mom making sausage sauce, which was sort of the thing that we ate once a week as a family. So just sitting there smelling the food and listening to her talk. And the other one is a trip we did as kids to San Francisco, and that morning we got to eat. Every morning we had croissants and hot chocolate, which was like a super treat. Every single day of that trip, and that's what popped into my head when you asked the question. It's awesome.
I love it.
So good. For the record, about a huge John's smile. Food memories, he can remember that he was on a road trip with somebody, and what the angle of the exit looked like, where they stopped at that A&W for some root beer float. Yeah. And today, he can go back on Google Maps and find it.
As long as it's food related, because if there's no food, the memory's not as sharp.
Memory doesn't exist.
Okay.
Probably.
That's good. That's a gift. Well, you're in the right business, and I think a lot of our listeners out there dream about doing what you've done.
Right.
So at some point, I guarantee that 90% of our listeners, I want to open a cheese and wine shop.
Yeah,
why would I want to do that?
Why not?
It sounds so cool. It's sexy. It's got everything. So if you don't mind, give us the full origin story. You can do it comic book style, whatever you want, but just give us the full origin story.
First, for anybody out there who wants to open a cheese shop, I'd say, do you want to get rich or do you want to open a cheese shop? So you gotta have your why of why you're going into it. But yeah, we were in Grenada in the Caribbean, sitting on the beach on our honeymoon.
It was amazing.
And what were you reading, John?
I was reading a book by Isaac Asimov, the Foundation series. And I was, we were sitting there. It was like day two of the honeymoon. And this book, it's a great teen sci-fi book. It's awesome. And I was thinking about my future. And I was also drinking a lot of pink and green and purple drinks.
You don't drink. And they had an
umbrella in them.
Pink and purple with umbrellas. Yeah,
there's a rule
amazing.
That you have to be able to see the beach to have an umbrella in your drink. That's just
so,
the rule.
I was on the beach, so it okay. counts. But I would still do it off the beach. Those are my style.
Not to
drinks.
Gender our drinks, but John really likes
like
typically
those.
Girly drinks. Sorry, okay. let's just
They're
put
amazing.
That out there.
And so I was sitting there and I was thinking about my future. I'm a CPA by trade, so I was doing audit work at Deloitte & Touche. And I had just had the most amazing wedding. I have the most amazing wife. We have amazing dogs, a great house. And the only thing in the equation that wasn't stacking up was the work that I was doing, the job. And I was thinking back to my time at Georgetown and doing all the work that I did, all of the activities, all of the schoolwork, all of the fun that we had. And I wasn't happy with that future of my career. And so I leaned over to Kendall and I said, Kendall, I'm going to quit my job when we get home.
And did you hate your job? Because a lot of people have this misnomer that people hate their job. Sometimes they do. Did you hate it or just wasn't fulfilling? Like you enjoyed it, but it just wasn't fulfilling.
I didn't. At that time, there wasn't much enjoyment okay. for me. There was no passion behind it.
Okay.
Because I joke with Kendall, and this is just my saying, and just that not everybody loves auditors, but everybody loves cheese. So like when you go to work as an auditor, sometimes you get stuck in a closet. Sometimes you get stuck in a room with no windows.
For all my Dirty Dancing fans out there, I always say no one puts baby in a corner, and yeah. John worked in a lot of corners.
Yeah. Okay. So it was unfulfilling for me. The people were amazing, my dearest friends even now, but the work itself was unfulfilling. So I leaned over and I just told Kendall, you know, I really wanted to have Kendall as my wife 30 years from now. And if I stayed in that career, the likelihood would probably be pretty low. If I wasn't fully engaged and fully finding joy in everything, that would lead me down a path that I wasn't comfortable with. And so we didn't know what I was going to do.
No, okay. So literally, I'm reading my romantic, yeah. cheesy book. Don't judge
it
us.
We're on our honeymoon.
Okay?
It was awesome.
And he turns to me and says, I'm going to quit my job. I mean, straight up.
Right.
Second
day. Way
honeymoon.
To start the honeymoon.
Yes.
Yeah.
She didn't
day,
know like, about annulment, I don't think.
Yeah. I was like, what are the rules? No. Actually, it didn't shock me at all. And we've always been risk takers and go get it. And so I said, what are you going to do? And he said, something in cheese. And one of the things that it's as hokey as it sounds is you say that you just want to make people happy and everybody likes cheese. So it's okay. A few vegans out there, we sell other things besides cheese, but really our personal mission we've found is to spread joy. And we just do that through food. But you turned to me and yeah. said it that day. And then I was like, what does that look like? What do you mean you're going to do something in cheese?
So yeah. So over the course of those few weeks, on our honeymoon, we talked about it and we spent time kind of diving into it, and it was searching for my passion, right? I wanted to have a job that got me as excited as everything else in my life. And so that feeling of jumping out of bed in the morning, hitting the ground running, putting as much energy as I could into it to make myself a better person, so that Kendall would be married to a better person every single day of her life. That's what I wanted to find. And so a typical career path for somebody like me would have been going to get an MBA. And you get tuition debt, you get spend 2 years of your time, lot of resources. And so instead we discussed what it would look like to actually try to open something instead of just writing a business plan as an undergrad or as a MBA, trying to write a business plan and execute a business plan with that same amount of time, same amount of debt. So we gave ourselves 2 years.
Actually, this is a little bit different. I mean, it was pretty quick. You said I could go get an MBA and come out of school with a lot of debt and a business plan, or I believe in my skill set. I can write a business plan, put that money straight into a business, and if I don't have something open in 2 years, I'll go back to being a CPA. So we always say, make me an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah. And how old are you at the time?
Oh, gosh. I don't have
26,
any idea. 25?
25.
Okay, 25. Yeah, it's interesting having a conversation with this younger guy, I was thinking about switching, and you just hit it right on the head, is you got to ask yourself, can I always get the job that I have? And most of the time, the answer is yes. And so that takes a lot of the risk. There's still a ton of risk, but it takes a lot of the risk out of it. So you go and do your own kind of MBA for these 2 years. Is it when you start the planning, and walk us through that. So you go, I'm going to do this and just...
So my last day was February 6th of 2008. That next week, I jumped on a plane to New York. And we didn't know exactly what I wanted to do at that point, so it was more of an exploration time. I went to basically a boot camp in New York about cheese. So I learned.
Because how much of cheese do you know at this point?
Not much. Nothing.
The
not
Vita, much. Okay. American Singles.
Okay, so boxes. It's just.
Yeah, no, I just.
Your passion just want to spread joy, and you love cheese, and.
And I was sort of exploring different routes.
So he also ran a grilled cheese club for extra credit in high school.
Right? Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
Grilled cheese club for extra credit. That's
awesome.
Good.
And your parents caught you at 2 a.m. when you were in your youth eating cheese out of the fridge. Yeah. So, I mean, that's where we say cheese picked you.
Cheese, yeah. Cheese has been an integral part of my life, I guess. So during the other thing that I did at that time was got an internship at Kirby Lane Cafe, which is a local... 24-hour diner. There was 4 locations at the time, and a friend of ours from college, we bumped, after I'd made this crazy decision, I bumped into him at a happy hour one night and told him what I was planning to do. And when you put things out in the universe, awesome things typically come back. Kendall and I believe in that a lot. And so I was telling him about my sort of new plan to sort of find my passion, and I had no idea what food service was. And so his father and mother owned the Kirby Lane Cafe. So he put me in touch, got me an internship, and I spent 6 months, 3 months in the internship, learning everything from dishwashing to serving to hosting to helping develop menu items, working in the commissary, being a manager in the graveyard shift, which is a life experience everyone should have at least once. And then I helped manage and move one of the locations. So I got this amazing sort of intense 6 months experience in food service. And we walked out of there knowing that I never wanted to cook that much bacon ever again in my life. So what's really important about finding your passion with purpose, or at least what Kendall and I talk about, is you need to first often find out what you don't want before you end up narrowing it into what you do want. And so I got a ton of value in that first 8 months of learning what things that we didn't want. So standing over a griddle.
I think another important part of that story was every time we've gone into a relationship, we've gone in, what's the win for everybody involved? And that's our approach to customer service, collaborations, partnerships, like every stakeholder involved in this, what are they getting out of it? So when you went and asked for that internship, it just so happened that they had just lost their CPA. They're like, wait, you're a CPA? Oh, that's a win-win. So not only did they say, we'll teach you everything we can about this restaurant side, but we need you to help us with our books, which allowed you to see all the financials as well. So we were able to bring that skill set and get from it too.
And I guess we've seen too with a lot of guests that they're willing to take an internship. You know, that's kind of humbling. But also it's just they're willing to even work for free because it teaches you what you don't want to do. But it also teaches you, I'm working for free now. Do I love it? And it sounds like you loved certain parts of it. And so
the hospitality behind it was amazing. Yeah. Absolutely.
And but it was through that we realized it was keeping you away from me more. You were working long hours, and that's what the restaurant industry and life is. And we really had to get together and vision together and butcher paper to our wall at various different times in our life. And that one was, okay, we want to be together. And what does this future look like together? And you quit your job on our honeymoon so we could be together more and happy. And that's when we decided, okay, well, we're good at eating and we're good at talking. And they usually say your strengths are what you're good at, naturally good at. So we're like, so our strengths are eating
and
talking.
And being together.
And that we're at our best when we're together, and that we wanted to travel, and how do we put that all together? And at the time, I had been running a program at a local nonprofit for survivors of human trafficking and immigrant survivors of crime. And I loved the work, but I was experiencing also a little secondary trauma. We wanted to start a family soon. And there were some dangerous high-profile cases and a mixture of all these things that said, okay, I need to put a pause on this and figure out where this is going. And I was raised by ranchers. My parents are cattle ranchers in North Texas, still the hardest working people I know, up at 5 a.m. and at 10 p.m. every night. And for that perspective, I knew that didn't want to make cheese. To this day, people say, oh, so which cheeses do you make? We are not cheese makers. We're storytellers. And our goal is to tell a story of artisanal foods and relay that labor of love. But we also knew that we didn't want to move out to the country and have that lifestyle. And truly, it's an amazing lifestyle because they can't pick up and leave and go to Spain because you have to care for your animals, at least if you're a farmstead cheesemaker. So we were able to really put on paper what it was that we wanted and pick through it and realize that I had this ability to speak to that labor of love. I'd grown up showing sheep. I was a rodeo competitor. I ran for Rodeo Queen. And so all of a sudden, all this intersectionality happened where we could put your business skills together. We joke my ability to work for free at a nonprofit. Ha ha. Surely we could start our own business, which is never the goal. That is clearly not sustainable long term. But we could do those and do something we love and speak to this labor of love of other people doing, but in a way that is what we're passionate about and what we're good at.
And then how'd you set it up so that the hours weren't insane? And they might have been at the beginning, but how did you, because that's a lot of listeners wrestle with that.
I think Kendall said there's a lot of long hours. We're not afraid of long hours. It's where you put your time, that how you value your time matters. I mean, I work longer hours now than I've worked ever.
But you guys are together too.
Exactly. Yeah, we've actively made the choice around that. And so, you know, I was doing 16-hour days at Deloitte & Touche and 16-hour days at Kirby Lane and 16-hour days now. But I'm doing something that I find fulfilling and I get joy from. And so it doesn't feel like that. My feet hit the ground every morning, 4:15, and I'm ready to go and excited and looking forward to that next opportunity, next challenge. And so during those first few months, we were strategic when we opened to keep Monday as a non-customer day. And that allowed us to regroup, do all the books and everything. We got our first day off in month number 8.
Yeah, no, when you say that we controlled the hours, you have to remember as a brick and mortar retailer, times we're open is when we're serving customers. The times we're closed is when we're running the business and paying the bills and ordering cheese and doing everything else that you have to do to keep it going.
Our first half day off was in 8 months. Our first full day off was 2 years into the business. And then our first lunch together was 2 years into the business. So we put in our effort, time, and you know, you've got to make those choices. And we made them together every day. We part of our working as a couple strategy that as a husband and wife team, you always need to have a plan before you get in. It's, exit strategy is just as important as the starting spot, is that we have an agreement between the two of us that at any point one of us can say we're going to close down the business, because if it gets in between our relationship, that's the complete opposite outcome that we were hoping for. And so if we look at each other and one of us says it's time, then it's time without question.
So we call it our bailout clause. Yeah. And one of our core principles is family first, then business. And so remembering why we got into it is to be building each other up and then building up family for other people as well.
I love that family first and the bailout. And a lot of listeners in today's age, it's almost the double. It's always a lot of times it's a husband and wife combination. My beautiful wife's over here would be nothing without working together. And so there's some learnings to that. It's not always easy. And so for our listeners out there, are there any guidelines? You mentioned one, some rules that you have. Is there anything that you've learned? How have you kind of gotten better at it over time?
We have a lot of guidelines and rules, and we break them all the time. And I think the most important thing is realigning them. Yeah. So typical things like no business in the bedroom from the moment we open the doors, like put away your cell phone.
Is that a certain time or at night, or is it just in the house? Like what? Or is it just a certain room?
John, now when he gets home, when we get home, so our typical day is, well, take him through a typical day. You started off. John gets up at 4:30.
I'll answer this question because I think, and then I'll do that because I like that one will take a while.
So now you're witnessing one of our quarrels.
At 5:15, when we get home at night, that's the kids' time. That you've got to dedicate certain time to the parts of your life that matter. And so for me, the kids' time starts when I get home at night. And so I put my phone away. I turn off notifications. And that's how I operate. The rule that the two of us have for our relationship is the bedroom is sacred space. So all that stuff stays out so that we can sleep well.
That being said, we do have a lot of board meetings in the jacuzzi tub, but...
Right. Like, so, do you ever have to walk out, go, do you ever, someone brings up something that's work-related, go, you got to walk out here? Do you ever
we're, one thing that's unfair, and we have to recognize what we do, is I'm one of those people who, my head hits the pillow, and I go, oh my gosh, and all of a sudden, I download everything that I didn't do that day or was supposed to do, and I would like to turn to John and tell him everything, and then that lets me sleep easily. Well, I just put everything I was carrying on him, and then he's awake for 5 more hours. So, and I have done that many times, but we have to recommit to that. But I think our biggest key to working together is that oftentimes when people work together, I always come at them and I'll say, when they ask us for our success tips, are you working together because you have to or because you want to? And both are fine, and there's a space for both, and there's tips and tools of the trade for both of them. For us, we remind ourselves when it gets tough that we wanted to work together every day, and so what do we do to make it where we're enjoying it every day? And then my mom, John got asked to judge the World Champion Cheese Contest in New Zealand.
So you get to go to New Zealand. So this is what I'm talking about. This is the romantic life I like to hear about.
Exactly.
So you go to New Zealand to judge the World Championship of Cheese.
New Zealand Champions of Cheese.
Oh, pretty cool. Okay.
That's and awesome. That was amazing. That was in 2014, and we got to take the kids.
So my mom traveled with us for just a part of it to watch the kids, and she said, "It's not. Now I get it. It's not that you guys never argue, because to this date, we've never really had a big blowout fight, and we've been together 16 years or so.
Yeah.
She said, it's not that y'all don't argue or disagree. It's that you immediately communicate, course correct, and as John likes to say, reset.
Yeah.
And so, and I didn't notice that about us, but if one of us says something, you know, it'll be a couple minutes, and maybe the other one will come back and say, hey, is this what you meant? Are you saying that I should have done this better? Or and we just immediately talk it out, and then, oh, okay, cleared the air, reset, and we move forward.
Yeah.
So I think that for us is what really works.
That's an important part of any relationship. We're trying to teach our kids that, right? Instead of them saying sorry or having to feel awful for a period of time, if they've done something wrong, and we have to communicate that to them, we reset for them immediately and give them the space to try to reset so that when they come back down, there's no more, they don't have to worry about us still holding a grudge or holding it over their head that they did something wrong 5 minutes ago. And so that's something that we try to do in our personal relationship, and it's healthy with any. I call it the
leadership.
Art of the reset.
I love that. I love the reset. The CEO of Walmart uses fire stops, the doors. So in London, they have all these fire stop doors. And so it's just when things are hitting the wall, quick, let's stop, reset. I love that. And then, Kendall, you mentioned something. I'm just going to bring it up just because we came across it in research. You might already know this, but our listeners might not. Is that a lot of people at night, it's tough for them to sleep because they are processing in their head what they didn't do or what they need to do the next day. It turns out the neuroscience shows that if you journal that, make that to-do list the evening before, then it's physically, instead of putting it onto John, it physically puts it on the paper. So I just thought that would be super helpful. But I love this.
To that point, yeah. I do that now, but I have sometimes had to find that once I write it in that journal, I have to go put the journal outside the room, because even just it being by
my head
is still right there.
That's good.
To physically
That's
be out
there.
Of our space.
I can feel it. That's pretty cool. So physically has to move out of the
room.
It has
an energy. Yeah, energy, whether it's negative or positive.
That's pretty cool. And then so obviously you've got 3 locations. What you do is amazing because you put customers first, as you mentioned, and it's you're telling stories, but you're allowing when people come to your stores and then they have a story. And then when they put, I've been to a party where all the cheese was supplied by you is fantastic and wonderful. And now not only is the person the host, that put that on, Trish, have an amazing story to tell, but now everyone that was there just saw the amazing layout, and then they tell the story. So what you do is super wonderful. Now walk us through the darkest moment. It might be different for both of you to when you're sitting there, like, when was it? How far in? And you said, what are we doing? Like, this isn't going to happen. We all kind of go through that. Just, it might have been the recession. It could have been anything. But when was a dark moment when you go, oh, man, are we going to get through this?
That's great. I think that there's a couple things that come to mind when
Which
I think about that.
Moment?
Yeah. I think, Kendall, I think of the trajectory of being an entrepreneur. It's not a straight line, for sure. Our experience, it goes up and down, but it's always angling up. but you see that there's some ups and downs, and that's just a part of growth. You know, you're, as an entrepreneur, you're taking risks, you're investing in something with the limited information that you have. You're making what I think of as an intuitive leap. So you, as a CEO or a small business owner, you're doing something every day that you've never done before, most likely. And so you have to jump over an information gap that you don't have, and you don't have enough time to get it. It costs too much, or it's too much time. And so the darkest challenges often have come from risks that we took. We took a big risk last year opening a downtown location in 2018, January of 2018. We ended up closing that location at the end of the year because once we started operating, we identified that the assumptions that we made based off of the best data that we had were not coming to fruition. And so that project transitioned from what was going to be a retail shop to what turned out to be more or less a grilled cheese concept. And we had already said a few minutes ago on the podcast that we didn't want to stand over a griddle and cook grilled cheese every day. We knew that 10 years ago. And so when we were sitting together in September of this last year talking about the future of our business and we were realigning ourselves quite a bit, we talked about our core principles. And be true to yourself and to others is one of our core principles. And we, looking back, it was one of our team members that pointed it out because we were going to have to either make an investment and change the entire sort of concept and flip the concept, or something else just as dramatic. And I presented the ideas that I had, and one of my team members said, "Don't forget the core principles." And does this have passion with purpose? Are you being true to yourself? And Kendall and I went home that day and decided that we were going
to
close.
And it was easy to answer. We said no. And the answer was easy. Getting there was tough because we're hard workers. Nobody wants to fail. Nobody wants that on their resume. And
is it going to fail? What if this new concept succeeds?
That's what he says.
Oh, I like that.
And then we're like, oh yeah, wow, we don't want that projection of success.
Because you build something that then owns you, and that's exactly why you didn't. That's why you got 10 years ago, you wanted to get out of that, and all of a sudden that happens all the time. You build something that now it controls you.
That has been a very challenging experience for me. Closing a business line, which is what we did, has people impact. And that I went into a deep depression over the last 6 months working through all that because, it's trying. It's hard. Those decisions are big. They impact more than just Kendall and I now. So that was one experience. I would say another one was in those first 8 months. You know, we hadn't gotten a day off and
It was simultaneously exhilarating seeing our names on menus around the town. And we went out, and I remember I had a drink at a Draft House pub, which is 2 blocks away, and we're sitting down and we're just taking a load off. And we knew life would never be the same when this lady goes, "My cheesemonger, you're my cheesemonger." And we just started laughing to ourselves, like, what have we done? But that was very intentional when we chose to brand ourselves as our business, because so many people get caught up in this work-life balance. And I said, you know what? I think the tension comes from when you're trying to separate the two and you're calculating it and it's a zero-sum game and 5 hours here and five. Instead, if we can just put it all into one big melting pot and have some rules of the game that help us succeed a little bit more or less, but that was the way to win for us. And so for us, that's where work is play and play is work. And there are times that both are challenging, but when we travel for work now, we take our kids with us and we're able to do that. And so we're coming up on a trip going to Spain where we're visiting all of our producers, because we have a goal. Part of our mission is to do good, eat good, and we want to see how all the food we may sell is made, and we can speak to the ethics behind it. But we're taking our kids along with us, and we're going to go visit cheesemakers. And so putting it all into that one melting pot has been amazing for our brand, but it was challenging that one night when she came up and said that. But we realized everything was going to be different for us, for better or for worse, and then we've always tried to channel it for better.
No, it's interesting. It's good. I love that. It's a do good, eat good. That's what it was. Do good, eat good. It's amazing you go to Spain, check out the suppliers, make sure everything's checking out, and what an amazing trip it'll be for the kids as well. And we hear a lot of entrepreneurs, they start to have their kids work for the company at a young age. There's some tax ramifications for that, obviously, but also teaches them entrepreneurship. And so that'll be fun exposure for them as well.
Yep, they worked their first event they got paid for last weekend. We host a pop-up picnic as part of our endeavor to give back to the community. And we raised money for Austin Parks Foundation, and our kids helped give out free picnic baskets for a suggested donation. One of them did better than the other one. One of them got paid more, but they're ready to get to work.
That's great. And then when you first started out, did you take on funding or did you bootstrap it? How did that look?
Duct tape, baby.
Yeah, duct tape. There was some family funding, but a lot of bootstrapping. I would say we've been bootstrapping for 9 years, 9.5 years. I mean, we've reinvested what we've earned. We've been very fortunate to have an incredibly loyal customer base here in Austin, that just the community has received us so well. So we've been able to take some of the profits and put it back into the business. But we're still, we operate like a mom and pop. We bootstrap as much as we can. Duct tape. That's a great answer.
And then with your team, because you guys love what you do and you could work on it all the time, but you got to have that harmony you mentioned. So you got the family, so you got to make sure there's that harmony, that mix in there. How do you build? The hardest thing for entrepreneurs is often building a team so that you don't have to be quote unquote at the shop, whatever that shop looks like, that you don't have to physically always be there. Any tips and tricks on building out the team and having the team take ownership of their items?
I would think, just to jump it off, I think, every CEO will tell you, hire your weaknesses. I think the hardest thing we learned as a business early on is John and I are both people, meaning that we're in it for customer service and relationships. And I just incorrectly assumed that would make me a great manager. And it turned out it made me a horrible manager. And it's not that I need to be liked, but I take in information emotionally and I'm really empathetic and always reading other people. And I've made a lot of mistakes in our people management. And so it's something that we've really had to do to recognize that and train that skill set, but then also hire people who are really good at doing the people part of it. And everything that we have today is due to every single employee that has ever worked for us, whether they taught us a lot of lessons, positive or very challenging. Every one of us has helped contribute to and make the business that we have today. So just a big shout out and appreciation to all of them and for letting us improve every day and make our mistakes as well with them.
Yeah, we make mistakes regularly, and that's part of the process.
I will say that when we put this goal, I was pregnant with our first kid. We were a couple years into the business, and I was hormonal, and I was also just sad that my dad had passed away unexpectedly when I was in college. And I turned to John and just said, I can't believe my dad is never going to meet our kids. I can't believe he never met you. And John said, well, what's the one thing he did for you? What's the one legacy you can pass on? And I said, well, I think my love of diversity and cultural appreciation comes from all the traveling I got to do as a kid. So John said, okay, great. We're going to travel abroad with the kids every other year. And I said, that's ridiculous. We can't even get a vacation. How are we going to do that? And he said, well, we can't do it if we don't put it up there. One of the big adages that we always like to throw out the window is you can't have your cake and eat it too. We say, well, we're damn sure going to try.
We're definitely going to try.
So step one, they always tell you, write it down, put it on the board. So we wrote it down. And so we're coming up on that first one, which was to go visit England cheesemakers or cheesemakers in England. And right before, it's one of those, everything was going smoothly when we make the decision to go. And then we're a couple of weeks before and everything goes to hell culturally and in the business. And we had some staffing transitions and we thought, oh my gosh, we can't go. What are we doing? And then we reminded ourselves of family first and business and said, you know what? If the business can't survive this and all this work and sweat and tears and smiles that we've put into it in the last couple of years, if it can't survive us leaving for a month, then it isn't worth us doing. And it's not according to who we are. And then the best thing happened, Eric. When we left and came back, our team was so much better for it. And every time we've left, it's like it gives them breathing room, apparently, to do what they want, to step into new leadership positions, to make changes to that sign that has always frustrated them. And so instead of everything collapsing, it has empowered our team, and gave them space without us to then be the better leaders that they
are. We've got amazing people.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And I love that you mentioned that if we can't leave for a month, then what's the point? That's good. I love it. Now, I don't normally do this, but you guys are amazing storytellers. So I'm going to, while you're processing your mind, I'm going to actually just give a kind of open mic for you to tell any story you think is relevant for our audience. And our audience is just like all of us. We're trying to every day trying to unlock that superpower within us. So it can be family related. It could be business related. It could be a story that happened at the shop. Just something that you think would be helpful for our audience to hear.
I've got about six or seven that went through my mind. So I'm going to filter for 20 seconds. I think what Kendall and I talk about in our Passion with Purpose talk that we do is that passion was what started this adventure for me in 2008. There's a sense of feeling that you get with passion. You get this energy, enthusiasm, sort of this very long vision comes from it. 'Cause we like to say passion gives you energy. Right, and so you can pretty much do a ton of work. You can move yourself in an amazing direction, and that's what I went searching for. When I was in college, I was junior and senior year. I was the chairman of the school spirit sports promotion group on campus called Hoya Blue. I was the chairman of a Georgetown Traditions Day, one of the founders of that too. I was also the chairman of the board of the students of Georgetown Incorporated, which was where Kendall and I met. She was the VP of grocery at the time.
Food.
And so those were three giant things that I was doing on top of studying and on top of getting my name on the plaque at our local pub because I was there every night. And so I was doing a ton. And
is it really a plaque? Is there a name on there?
Yes.
There is. There's a physical. It's not metaphorically speaking. You're saying there's a...
The 99 Days Club.
You're both on the 99 Days Club. And is there a name to this pub?
The Tombs.
The Tombs.
Yes.
In Georgetown. It's still there?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So if I go in there, I'm going to take a picture, post it on Instagram.
2004. We're in the top right of the third column.
Okay. I love it.
Fantastic.
Do you go in there and have to... polish it or anything?
We did that so that if our kids went to school at Georgetown or anywhere, when they go to college, they can see past us saying study all the time and they can see that we had fun.
It's about
too.
The workplace.
I love it.
Because I simultaneously, while you're doing all those other things, graduated with 181 master's thesis and a minor. So the goal is to show them that you can do
both.
You can do it.
Now, meanwhile, my kids are going to see my name on this eating challenge that I did in Aspen. So you guys are way exceeding. So anyways, continue. That's awesome.
So this, when I went searching, it was for this passion because I wanted to wake up every day excited, enthusiastic, driven. But what we came to find out down the road was that without purpose, that energy can just be like, you know, when you like you fill up a balloon and you let it go and it just like sputters everywhere. I think that's a really great way to describe what passion is. It gives you a lot of momentum, but if you don't give it a direction, if you don't put purpose, you can end up pretty much anywhere. And that's the danger. So we're a mission-driven company where we are mission-driven people. And so it's the purpose that led us down this path. And I think that to me, when you lose that, I just didn't have it. I didn't have it when I was at Deloitte. I didn't have it until Kendall and I were working together side by side. Then I found it. And now every once in a while you lose it. So you have to realign and find it again.
I have a story for open mic too, but one I'd love for you to tell quickly is that customer service energy.
Yeah. So we talk about when we do our hiring, I talk about asking new potential employees what gives them energy, what drains their energy. I call them energy gainers and energy drainers. And where I came up with this was there was a customer that came through the front door probably in 2011. And you could tell the energy that she was bringing into the room. It was sort of sedated. It was sad. It was
sullen.
And it was impacting those of us around her. And I could just tell that there was just something. And so I worked really hard in those few minutes to engage her and find a way to understand what was going on for her in that moment. And it turns out that her dog had just been put down about 20 minutes before, and she was coming to our shop for a distraction. And so in that experience, Where I kind of came to was that basically there are no energy neutral people, and not everybody. So there's you either give energy or you drain energy as a human
at all times.
At
like
all
right
times.
Now,
so,
everybody in this room, us together, we're either adding to it or taking away.
And you can be both. You can be both at different times, and that's allowed. That's fair. Kendall gives me one day a month to. Not be at my
prime.
It's
a drain. Today's the day.
It's not net zero. It doesn't mean if he's giving, I'm taking. You can both be giving. So are you surrounding yourself with people, with your A-team, with your players, with your staff, with your friends, with people who are positively giving you energy, or are you surrounding yourself with people who are often taking
it? I started playing around with this idea of energy and then thinking through my life about the activities that I was doing at certain times. When you're doing activities that you're naturally gifted at, you're getting energy from it. Therefore, you can be giving that energy to other people because you need to have it. You need to be generating it. But where we end up thinking through this all is that you can actively be managing your energy by sharing your energy as well by simple things like smiling or giving extra high fives throughout the day.
You index high on the high fives. I love it. These guys are super. Every time I've seen them, they're positive. So I don't want to be there for your drain day. But every time I've met you, it's always been positive, both of you. So it's been great.
Well, it's fun. And it's what I would ask all the listeners here to do is just, our personal mission is to spread joy. And you can spread joy through energy. And so use at your disposal, you've got some of the greatest
It's everybody has this superpower.
Yeah, the superpower
that everybody has.
I think
has.
Of it as smiling. Smiling is the greatest superpower. You can change somebody's life by providing them with a simple smile. They may have not seen a smile in weeks. They may not been given a smile in weeks. You don't even have to know them. Walking down the street, you can just smile at somebody. And that can change the
trajectory.
Can you
believe he's from New York? I think he's totally
right.
Texas.
So, besides you're in Austin. That's good. Yeah. I love New
so
York.
So that's what, when that we customer walked too. Through the door, I was providing as many smiles as I can. And eventually, her day turned around. She went from that, she ended up having more energy from coming in the shop than she came in with. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I would love to share too with people is, especially the women out there, we are taught that you can't just walk the walk, don't talk the talk, right? And let your actions speak louder for words and all those other cliches, and people will acknowledge your hard work if you just put your nose to the grind. And I think I've really had to learn in our business the power of also advocating for yourself. And we're taught at a young age that we shouldn't stand up and express ourselves or root for ourselves because that's grandiose or braggadocious or those kinds of things. But then how do we as business owners do it in a way that also attracts customers and doesn't repel them and isn't offensive and off-putting? And so women, we're really having to switch that notion and just to say, yes, you can be nice and advocate for yourself at the same time. And a story that my mom told me when I was growing up was that when she was running for cheerleader in high school, it was a popularity vote, and that they collected ballots and went around collecting all the ballots, and her homeroom teacher picked hers out and said, "Well, looky here, little Miss Debbie voted for herself." And to this day, her eyes tear up and her face turns red and she gets this feeling in the pit of her stomach, and I feel it for her and I'm embarrassed for her. But then I think, why? Why would we be embarrassed? Why were we trained not to vote for ourselves? Like if you're a political candidate and you're running for office and somebody sees you put your opponent's name in, don't you think it's a red flag? Like you don't believe in your capabilities, right? So I think the greatest thing that I'm learning is how do we be cheerleaders for ourselves and put them out there? And I think it all comes down to you have to put your name in that hat. But as long as you're authentic and real and relatable and you're genuine and you share the successes and the failures, which we don't really like to call failures. John likes to call it paying tuition. So as long as you're sharing all of those stories and makes you a real person, then people want to root for you and they'll want you to succeed. And the other thing I've really learned recently is somebody else winning is not my loss. We can all win together, and there's room for that. And so to celebrate each other and those successes and then to keep moving forward.
No, I love that. That's true. You got to advocate for yourself and celebrate everyone's successes. The smile thing, when I'm having a bad day, sometimes when I'm draining, then I kind of flip it and I start to count how many people I can make smile. Some people I freak out, but just you're smiling at them, so it's good.
I let somebody go with a smile on my face, but I just thought, you know what, this is awkward for them and awkward for me, and I just need to be to the point. But if I can smile, it's the one thing I can do to put some positivity in this room.
Fill in the blank. A great day is when...
Oh, I get to play with my kids in the afternoon after getting home from a great day at work.
When I make somebody smile.
Is there a book, a movie, or a quote that everyone listening should know about?
You don't get what you don't ask for.
Jump on it. I'm going to say the same thing. Mm.
Don't stop believing. What you don't ask for. I like that.
And I'll go Journey. Don't Stop Believing.
Don't Stop Believing by Journey. I love that. Born and raised in South Detroit. I was born and raised in North Detroit. But I love
Close
that
enough.
Song. It's awesome. Close enough. I love it. A bad day is when...
I don't keep my eyes on my own paper. And I'm comparing myself to other people and their work or what they're doing instead of doing my own hustle and my own game.
When I sleep late, I don't get my gratitudes done.
If you were to text your 20-year-old self, what would you text?
You got this, girl. You're awesome.
Yeah, that's right. At 20 years old, that's right about the time that Kendall and I met and started dating.
We met and you were... Yeah. Pansy footing around.
Yeah, I was not. So, she's got this. That would be my quote. Let Kendall do. Wait
she's
for
got
Kendall
this.
To make the move.
And I know you're in lightning round, but when I was 20, I was actually hospitalized for depression after a pretty scary night, and I went through a lot of therapy. And so for me, it's just remembering that whatever tools I have at the time, I have enough. I am what I need, and I can make it through it. That's all we need.
I love it. And then you mentioned something, morning routine. So win the morning, win the day. Yeah, so I said routine. You said if I get up late. So morning routines, there might not be anything routine about it because you've got young kids. But both of you, just walk me through your morning routine. When do you normally get up? What do you do and then before you leave?
My morning routine, I follow the miracle morning practice. So 4:15, wake up, try to... go straight into gratitudes, visioning, journaling, appreciations, exercise, meditation. I do a combination of those things typically. And then I usually have about an hour and a half left. Then I start to work on my number one project to move the business forward. One of my favorite books is The One Thing. So what's the one thing I can do today to make everything else unnecessary or easier in the business? And so I try to focus on that. If I get the day right, that's how I start. And then I work on my daily operating system so that the rest of my day is set up for success.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. So The One Thing, both books you mentioned, I believe, are from Austonians,
yes.
Which is crazy, but they're national bestsellers. They're huge books. The One Thing by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, and then Miracle Mornings by
Hal Elrod.
Yeah. Okay, Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. I got to read that. I've heard it's amazing. I've skimmed some.
Easy, quick read.
Yeah. I've heard he's amazing, too. I got to bump into him. We got to get him on here. But
absolutely.
That's awesome.
My accountability partner, Skylar Williamson of Williamson Realty Group, is the one that... when we were talking about it, he's a former Army Ranger, and he was saying, every day it feels like I'm waking up for Christmas. And I was like, I want that feeling. That's what I want. And that's how it all started. So
that's awesome.
And for you, your win is if by the time the kids are up, you've gone upstairs and you get to do a dance with your daughter. I know that's your secret.
That's my secret. Thanks.
That you'll have danced with her every day that you could or that she would let you. And so John rolls back from working out and all of his things at 6. And at 6, I go either to yoga or for a quick run. I was bedridden 11 weeks last year when my back went out and had surgery. And that was a really tough, dark time for us. Our downtown location wasn't doing well. So we really had to crawl ourselves out of that one. So to me, yoga is meditation. While it's great exercise, I really go to just my brain, just still my brain. Our brains, and I'm sure every entrepreneur out there, are always going. We could always do more. What can we do next? What's exciting? How can we improve? Which I think is every best CEO is always looking at how they can improve. But for me, I need that yoga to still my brain and then to go get fresh air, anything I can do to be outdoors. And then we're back and the kids are screaming
by
6:45.
Then the hurricane wakes up. And then we get them to school.
Then we don't know what happens in the next
30
minutes.
Sometimes they have shoes on, sometimes they don't.
They do. I have left the house twice with no pants. So let's just say that next 30 minutes is crazy, but somehow we all make it, and then we do the afternoon. Yeah.
That's amazing. Our kids are the similar ages, so it is. It's just a good, whenever you have a bad day, it's just amazing. It just resets everything. As use your words, it just helps reset and go, man, this is what it's all about. And the fact you're able to incorporate not only them, but everything in that harmony. It's not easy to do. It's not perfect every day. And I think that's what entrepreneurs need to understand, those starting out, that it's messy. But it's really, and I love what you guys said, is always looking at it and going, hey, if this, what does success look like on this piece? Sometimes you got to kill part of the business because it's about what's going to be the best for the customer, and what's best for the customer is always best for you, starting with you first. So a lot of us are always looking for that perfect time to step into our passion. And you got to understand that the best time to step in your passion was yesterday. The second best time is today. So I want you to remember John and Kendall's story, that they did it on their second day of the honeymoon. Can you imagine kind of worst timing to spring that? And so when you're thinking about, I got to wait for perfect timing, just remember John and Kendall's story, that the time was now. This has been amazing just to sit down with you, and I can't wait to have you back on the show because we've only just scratched the surface. I love that not everybody loves auditors, but everybody loves cheese.
Everybody does love cheese.
How can our listeners find more about you and Antonelli's? How can we find out more?
Awesome. We've got a webpage, www.antonellischeese.com. We're pretty active on Facebook and Instagram as well. And then come see us speak. John and I've got a TEDx talk, and we're out there on the speaker track just trying to not coach anybody and tell them how to live their lives, but just to share our successes and some of our challenges and hope that it might inspire them or they can learn from it.
I love it. What's the name of the TED Talk?
Passion with purpose.
Passion with Purpose. Go check
TEDx
it out.
Talk.
TEDx Talk. We'll put it in the show notes. So we'll check that out. But can't thank you enough. I know the listeners are going to get so much out of it. You guys are amazing. So thank you so much.
Thanks for
You're
having
awesome.
Us, Eric.
Thank you.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you.